Elvis Costello is our guest throughout the hour in the special 20th anniversary edition of the World Cafe today. We'll reach back into the 90s later on, but we start off with a visit from the British singer-songwriter and original New Waver, talking about his 2009 album Secret, Profane, and Sugarcane, which was recorded with T-Bone Burnett producing. I ask him about re-recording the song Complicated Shadows. It was originally on the 1996 album All This Useless Beauty.
Well, Complicated Shadows was actually written as a song for Johnny Cash. The record contains two songs associated with John, Hidden Shame, which he did record, and Complicated Shadows, which I sent to him when he was working on the American recordings. He didn't pick it up, but it took me a while to get it out of the shadow of how I imagined he might have done it. That might seem a strange thing, but when you write songs, sometimes you have a very strong impression of how another singer might have performed it. I did cut it with the Attractions, actually, on our last record together, in a kind of rock and roll arrangement that suited the lineup of that band. The demo, on the other hand, which dates from around the same time, did sound like I was styling it for Johnny Cash. And so it's taken me this long to get the song back out of the shadow of both those recordings.
And you can do a version of that one?
I can if you would like to hear it.
Absolutely.
Well, you know your time has come, and you're sorry for what you've done. You should have never been playing with a gun in those complicated shadows. Well, there's a line that you must toe, and it'll soon be time to go. But it's darker than you know in these complicated shadows. All you gangsters and rude clowns who were shooting up the town when you should have found someone to put the blame on. Though the fury's hot and hard, I still see that cold graveyard. There's a solitary stone that's got your name on. You don't have to take it from me, but I know of what I speak. You think you're like iron and steel, but iron and steel will burn and break in those complicated shadows. Dum 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 dum, boom boom boom, do dum bum bum. Sometimes justice you will find is just dumb, not colorblind. And the poor shattered mind can't take it all in. All those phantoms and those shades should jump up on Judgment Day and say to the Almighty, I'm still stinking of sin. But the jury was dismissed. They took his neck and they give it a twist. So you see, you won't be missed in those complicated shadows. You can say just what you like in a voice like a John Ford film. Take the law into your hands. You will soon get tired of killing in these complicated shadows. Complicated shadows. Complicated shadows. Complicated shadows. Complicated shadows. Complicated shadows. Complicated shadows.
Really nice version of Complicated Shadows, one you'll find on Elvis Costello's new Secret, Profane, and Sugarcane. And it brings to mind a couple of questions. How do you feel when you turn a song into Johnny Cash to see if he likes it? I would think that would make one nervous.
I didn't actually, you know, yeah, I send it. I met Johnny in 1979 when he came to stay at his then son-in-law's house over Christmas that year. And we ended up, a bunch of us, recording some tunes in the basement of Nick Lowe's house. And I remember Nick telling me sometime later that he, in the middle of the night, you know, maybe having had a glass or two of wine. He wrote this incredible song, The Beast in Me, and thought it just perfect for John until actually having to sing it for him. I think he tells this song himself, this story himself, so I'm not telling tales out of school here. And you always imagine the voice when working as a songwriter, and then the voice that comes out of your head is some timid thing. And, it's a very daunting thing. I remember we put up the tapes of the song that I sang on with Johnny in 1979, it having been in the vault for 30 years. We didn't mix it until about 4 years ago. Everybody had forgotten that at the session they cut Without Love, Nick Lowe's song, which went on to be a pretty well known later Johnny Cash track. But we cut a gospel song at the same session, which I sang harmony on, and the comedy of my voice coming in next to John's is something that'll live with me forever. That the experience of singing with him is humbling and sobering, to say the least.
Elvis Costello, that interview first aired in 2009 after the release of Secret, Profane, and Sugarcane. We're listening back to just a few of the Elvis Costello interviews throughout the Cafe's 20 years. Costello has worked with many great musicians, including, in this clip from 2006, the great New Orleans piano player and composer Alan Toussaint. The pair's album, The River in Reverse, was one of the first albums recorded in New Orleans after Hurricane Katrina. We'll start with a performance of the song, Who's Gonna Help a Brother Get Further?
We may seem happy, like everything's all right. From the outside looking in, everything's uptight. But deep down inside, we're covering up the pain. It's an old thing, it's a soul thing, but it's a real thing. Pray tell what's gonna happen to brother, who's gonna help him get further, for one another. Is that the truth, for one another? Hey, yeah, you're right. There's old dude standing on a corner waiting for a fox to pass. The only thing he's got to go by is this is where he saw less. And there's old John, $2 in his pocket, talking loud and thinks he's rich. And looked a little fool, too cool to go to school, get a job in 2 days he quits. Pray tell what's gonna happen to brother, who's gonna help him get further, or one another. Is that the truth, or one another? Yeah, you're right. Yeah, 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 yeah. Yeah, 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 yeah. Mama get up early, early in the morning. Papa's already gone, gone. Working two jobs for half of what is worth it. You know that it's wrong. What happened to the Liberty Bell? I heard so much about. Did it really ding dong, ding dong? It must have dinged wrong. It didn't ding long. Pray tell what's gonna happen to brother, who's gonna help him get further, or one another. Is that the truth, or one another? And again, the pray tell what's gonna happen to brother, who's gonna help him get further, or one another. Is that the truth, or one another? Yeah, 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 yeah. Yeah, 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 yeah. And did it really ding dong, ding dong? It must have dinged wrong, it didn't ding long. Did it really ding dong, ding dong? It must have dinged wrong, it didn't ding long.
Who's going to help a brother with Elvis Costello and Alan Toussaint playing live for us today? This music, some as we're hearing, some older Toussaint tunes, some new things they've written together, some just fabulous versions are in River in Reverse, which and is in many ways a fabulous collaboration, certainly, but also is, and it's not like there's a Guinness World Record on this, but it seems to have been the first album recorded back in New Orleans post-Katrina. And where did you actually go in the city to work, and what was it like there?
Well, when we first started writing, we were planning the recording sessions. It was by no means certain that you could go to the city. The city was effectively closed to visitors in the sense that all available hotel rooms were taken by people who were displaced and who lost residences, or people who were engaged in the recovery effort, or insurance assessors, or anybody that had business there that was to do with the circumstances in the city. That was while we were writing. By the time we came to book the studio time, we needed to make a start, and we did indeed make a start in Hollywood for the first week. And then we traveled for the second week of recording to Piety Street Studios in the appropriately named Bywater District, which, of course, didn't take any water, being as in slightly higher ground. As you know, nowhere is particularly high ground in New Orleans, but it was close enough to be a short drive. And on the first morning that I was in New Orleans, I came out of the hotel, walked onto Canal Street, which anybody who knows New Orleans will know as a teeming thoroughfare, to find six people on the street and a couple of cars driving by. Walked into the French Quarter to find many businesses shuttered and unable to open up as yet, probably for lack of people to come work there. Local businesses were the only ones open. More disappointingly, chain stores from the big corporations were all shuttered, and that seemed to be a little contradictory, that the people with the most resources for opening up again and offering employment were slowest to do that. But as we'd seen from the federal government response, perhaps we shouldn't be so surprised by the large organizations not really moving very quickly and helping the city. I took a detour on the way to the studio, asked the driver who was taking me to the studio if he didn't mind, and if he didn't think it was an intrusion to drive. He pointed in the direction of the worst of the devastation, and we drove over the bridge into the 9th and Lower 9th Ward, past Fats Domino's house, and saw the rise of the waterline against the houses up to the eaves and then over the eaves and down towards Levee. The houses, as you know, you've seen the television pictures, but it can't really prepare you for seeing it with your own eyes at eye level, and seeing houses knocked off their foundations, houses that had filled with water and become distended and broken, teddy bears hanging in trees, refrigerators on top of, you know, the top of the roof of a house, or a barge sitting on top of two houses. It's kind of like a very gruesome, surrealistic painting, you know. Mm-hmm.
Alan, at that point, had you already been back to the city to see your plays?
Yes, I had been back, and everything Elvis says is just as it really is, really was. And I must say, it's very slow process, but I'm glad to say that I've been back many times, and every time I see progress, it's looking good, very slowly, even a little too slow by just about anyone's standard. But I like movement, and we're moving towards the future, and I'm excited about it.
Elvis Costello and Alan Toussaint have put their love of the city together and their love of each other's music on this new album called River in Reverse. And I was wondering if you guys could do Nearer to You, and maybe tell a little bit, Alan, maybe tell a little bit about that one.
Well, Nearer to You has never been better than it is now. From the very, very first note, when you first hear the first human voice, and I must say, the song is a song that I thought I knew for a long time, having written it. However, it touched me as if it's something that brand new when I hear Elvis' first utterance on it. It really knocks me out. I'm almost embarrassed how much I like it.
I must say the first things I heard about you two working together was from Joe Henry, who ended up being the producer of the albums. I think we might be remiss if we didn't mention his role in this. And explain that a little bit, because I think some people have trouble understanding, you know, what a producer can do to help two artists in this situation.
Well, Joe, of course, had been in the studio with Alan last year working on a wonderful record called I Believe to My Soul, a collaborative record between Alan, Emma Thomas, Ann Peebles, Mavis Staples, and Billy Preston. And it was actually Joe who I called to find out if he had heard anything of Alan's whereabouts and well-being immediately after Katrina hit. As the process of us working together and the week I described came about, I was talking on the phone to Joe, and the idea about the record started to form in my head, and then I shared it with Alan, and he responded, and next thing I knew, we were writing songs, and it seemed natural, really. It was both Alan and I are record producers, that it might be either one of us could have taken the responsibility to produce the record, but as we were going to be the performers, it seemed to be very, very a good sense to have somebody standing outside of that performing role.
Amen.
And Joe was just the man. And Joe and Husky, who took care of the controls of the board, did a marvelous job. We went to work in a studio that they knew very well in Hollywood originally, and then a studio that we had very little experience of. Alan knew, and obviously a studio which had just reopened, and the people at Party deserve a lot of credit. They're one of those businesses, and it was important emotionally, I think, for the record to be returned to the place where a lot of this music was written. I thought it was the right thing to do. I was glad and happy to take some of the record company budget and spend it in New Orleans, not only just in the studio, but also in the hotels and any other business. We could show the way in that way, that the city is not mortally wounded. It's wounded, but people need to go back there and spend money and help with it. And, you know, obviously things like Mardi Gras and particularly Jazz Fest show the way. And music listeners, of course, who love the city for everything that's given to us, were there in great number at Jazz Fest. This song that we're going to sing was the one that I made a guest appearance with Alan, with Alan's band, and it was a real joy and a great honor, really, to be on the stage with him and at his homecoming in those circumstances. And this song, which is a song of longing, it occurred to me as I was singing it that it had this line in it, I know you say that you'll be home soon. And it had an appropriateness in that moment that I was singing it that had never occurred to me quite in the same force. And that's one of the beautiful things about going back to songs that have been heard in the past. So this is Nearer to You.
In a little more intimate performance than Jazz Fest, this is Nearer to You.
That's right.
Thank you. did I do? I'm trying to get closer to you. Nearer, nearer, nearer. I'm sorry if I seem a little bit stubborn sometimes.
To you, Elvis Costello and New Orleans piano player and composer Alan Toussaint, with music from their 2006 album The River in Reverse, which they recorded in New Orleans as the floodwaters of Katrina receded. The World Cafe is taking a trip to New Orleans this January. If you want information, you can visit our website at xbn.org. Coming up, some Elvis Costello songs you know, but definitely not these versions, when we get back to the World Cafe. More of our hour with Elvis Costello on this 20th anniversary special edition of the World Cafe today. This is a solo piano performance recorded at the Museum of Television and Radio in New York City in 2003 of Accidents Will Happen, the song he originally recorded with the Attractions back in 1979.
I just don't know where to begin. Though he says he'll wait forever, it's now or never, but they keep him hanging on. This silly champion, she says she can't go on without a chaperone. Accidents will happen, all in run. You used to be a victim, now you're not the only one. Accidents will happen, we're all in wrong. I don't want to hear it, cause I know what I've done. Well, there's so many fish in the sea that only rise up in the sweat and smoke like mercury, and they keep you hanging on. They say you're so young, your mouth is made up, your mind is undone. Accidents will happen, we're all in wrong. You used to be a victim, now you're not the only one. Accidents will happen, we're all in wrong. I don't want to hear it, cause I know what I've done. And it's the day that we do and never know. It's the words that we don't say that scare me so. There's so many people to see, so many people you can check upon and add to your collection, but they keep you hanging on until you're well hung. Your mind is made up, your mouth is undone. Accidents will happen, we're all in wrong. You used to be a victim, now you're not the only one. Accidents will happen, we're all in wrong. I don't want to hear it, cause I know what I've done. I know.
That special version of Accidents Will Happen, recorded by Elvis Costello at the Museum of TV and Radio in New York City in 2003. A year before that, Elvis joined us at Indre Studios in Philadelphia. And at that session, I asked him about what he had learned from singing with so many people throughout his career, including his 2001 album For the Stars with Swedish mezzo-soprano and Sophie von Otter, and how that impacted 2002's When I Was Cruel.
I don't know that Anne Sophie sings much like this, but, you know, yeah. It never does any harm at all to hang around with good musicians. I've done that most of my career. I can't play the guitar worth a damn, you know, or the piano or any of these. I can't play any instrument properly, just my own way. I mean, I'm not being falsely modest. That is the truth. I never played a scale in my life. If you point to the neck of the guitar and say, what's that note? I have no idea. It's just to put my fingers where I think they look good, you know? So like Chuck Berry always used to play these impossible chords in pictures. Like, I think some of them were made up chords. They would play like, you can't see this on the radio, but it's, you know, like that, you know? Like, and I've kept true to that. But obviously, working with Anne-Sophie really helped. You know, listening to the way she approached the songs that we did on For the Stars, they were, you know, a lot of classical musicians make the mistake of treating popular songs frivolously. And in truth, the compositions are, you know, if they're sincere, why would you sing an insincere song? Right. They've been written very determinedly. And they may not be the elevated form of music of a Mahler song or something that reaches for some intangible place. But they obviously touches in ways that we can't really describe. And she started to understand that the more we chose the songs together and the more we listened. So I suppose it helps to be reminded of that.
I heard a little bit interview that you did about this record talking about the title of the album, When I Was Cruel, which is obviously a song on here, too, and saying that
it's two songs, actually.
Right. Yeah. Cruel number two, yeah.
Yeah.
That you felt that early on in your career you were cruel.
Yes. No, there was an exaggerated form of cruelty. I said some things. I mean, I drank about 14 Pernod drinks one day when I was being interviewed by the New Musical Express and made sort of, you know, the kind of bravado claims that you're inclined to make when you're 22. And I lived with the consequences of that and a number of things that I said at that time. I'm not denying them or in any way saying that it wasn't part of the way I felt, but it wasn't the only way I felt.
Mm.
So, and the thing, the title, When I Was Cruel, is more to do with the fact that when you're younger, you really are quick to judge people, even people that need judging, like politicians and big businessmen and newspaper editors, some of the people described in this song. And the trouble is, when you get older, you see the egg stains on their tie or their bad toupee, and the Catholic part of me starts to forgive them, and then I have to remind myself to go on hating them as much as I would have done at 22. You know, so I suppose it has something to do with that distance.
Do you want to do one of those cruel, When I Was Cruel?
I'm going to do a song about, like, just the way we, you know, I'm a gloomy disposition. I said I mentioned I was a Catholic, and when I was a little kid, I used to get picked to do funerals a lot, and... this is true. I did. As an altar boy, I used to be an acolyte and carry the candle. And I never once got picked to do a wedding, only funerals. I was a funeral specialist at about 9. I had a great doleful face. I wouldn't say soulful. And so I suppose it conditioned me to be like that. And you have to be reminded sometimes to look up, you know. So here we go.
Silver trumpets will trill in the Arabic streets of Seville. There, on the edge of the asphalt, tempting fingertips, you stain your hands, pressed too hard. They'll color your lips. Now the flavor is tart, and the flavor is tart. Is it something you crave? Cause you say that you only feel bitterness, and you know it's a lie, 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 lie. Wild with a blackberry bush, there were blossoms of cherries to crush. There at the edge of the asphalt, tempting fingertips,
you stand, your hands pressed to heart. They'll color your lips, and the flavor is tart, and the flavor is tart. Is it something you crave? Cause you say that you want to feel bitterness. Would it kill you to show us a little sweetness? Odd, when nothing else grows, it was something like love that she chose. Oh, was a creature of habit, when pity would do, she wore down that heel with no feeling. She kept on in shoes. Now the flavor is tart, and the flavor is tart. Is it something you crave? Cause you say that you only feel bitterness, when you know it's a lie, 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 lie. Tart, and the flavor is tart, and the flavor is tart, and the flavor is. Nylon was hung from a thread, and the cold black seam ran down her leg. Fishermen look for their nets and send their regrets. The bug lay there broke, and she spoke. Is it some kind of joke? That a flavor is. The flavor is tart. Is it something you crave? Cause you say that you only feel bitterness, and you know it's a lie. Tart, and the flavor is tart. Is it something you crave? Cause you say that you only feel bitterness. Would it kill you to show us a little sweetness? Tart, and the flavor is tart, and the flavor is tart, and the flavor is.
Tart is another new one from When I Was Cruel, as Elvis Costello is our guest today on the World Cafe. Your dad was a band leader. What kind of music did he play?
Yeah, my dad is known locally. It's been written up now. You know, you got these books on the history of music everywhere in the world, you know. And he's the first man to have played bebop in Birkenhead. It's like, which, for those of you who don't know your Merseyside history, is the little town opposite Liverpool. And my dad was a trumpet player in the late 40s. When he heard Dizzy Gillespie and Clifford Brown and people like that, he tried to play like that. Later on, he went south to make a living. And when I was born, he took a job as a vocalist and made a very, you know, very successful career as a dance band vocalist in a more popular style, still playing trumpet occasionally. Mm. And then he was a solo cabaret singer. So I saw a lot of music with him through him, you know.
So you didn't have to rebel too much as
a... I beg your pardon?
You didn't have to rebel too much as a teenager.
No.
You,
yeah. No, he was bringing home pop records every week. It was, you know, the reason I know so many records is because he was bringing home stacks of 45s. Wow. every week to learn them. And after a while, I got wise to the fact these were coming in the house. And I think before that, he was giving them to, you know, neighbors' children. And then I started to get them. You know, please, please, may I? I'll have that. Thank you. And it was, you know, it was like being a very rich kid who could... In that one respect, I had money to burn because I could go and buy other records that he didn't get allotted to sing, but it was exciting.
Elvis Costello, that interview first aired in 2002, shortly after he released When I Was Cruel. We have more Elvis going back to 1996, playing with the attraction Steve Naive on a borrowed keyboard when we return to the World Cafe.
This is a World Cafe 20th Anniversary Edition featuring Elvis Costello through the years, and we have arrived at 1996, the most unusual session. Elvis arrived for our interview, and we sat around our cramped third-floor studio waiting an hour for attraction Steve Naive's piano to arrive. When it didn't, we sent a call out for any electronic keyboards, and one was procured from the frat house across the street. Listen to how Naive tames it. This was around the time of All This Useless Beauty, his final album with the Attractions, on which Elvis played a number of his songs that had been recorded by others, including this first song, You Bow Down, which was originally done by Roger McGuinn of the Byrds on his Back to Rio album in 1991.
Acquaintances scattered all over the land. I promise you now and again that I honor the contract. If it hadn't crumbled away in my hand, so we broke that vow independently now. But I don't know why you absolutely deny you bow down. You bow down. You bow down. When you first looked the way I might say it was really kindness. It must have hurt you to see our dreams sour. Now they say that justice and love are the next things to blindness. You're getting plenty of both of them now. And so you parade where appointments are made, never meant to be kept, unless you accept you bow down. You bow down. You bow down. You value the burnt ember of fallen leaves, and you long to delay as you feel their breath as they whisper it, won't hurt you now to betray if you just bow down. And now every time that we meet on the edge of a stereo, you're helping them sell off some new part in life. I remember a time when you would have seemed so superior. Now you say, will you please meet this good friend of mine? So you're in demand as long as you kiss their hand. All the applause is for the name that yours. You bow down. You bow down. You bow down. You bow down. You
You bowed down the duo version, Steve Naive, on explain this keyboard, Elvis.
Well, we were on our way from the airport, and we left happily to come to the World Cafe, only to find that somebody has kidnapped all our guitars and taken them off to an unknown destination. So, very kind gentleman across the street, Mr. Tim Allen from the group Chelsea, has lent us his DX7 here, which is heavily customized, and any sort of strange sounds that come out here are due to Steve's technical expertise at extricating these wonderful electronic noises from it.
There are some buttons that have XXX.
XXX, definitely. These are XXX sounds and forbidden. So this is kind of the Ishtar version of All This Useless Beauty. We're going to take this on the road. Afterwards, we're going to Tunisia with this sound.
I can't wait, actually.
In the Society Lounge.
So that song you began with was the one that Roger McGuinn added his jangly guitar to when he did. Did he ask you for that, or did you?
Yeah, he did. He did. I ran into him in New Orleans, in the Storyville Club in New Orleans, one night in the very late 1980s, and very late in the evening, and I was rather drunk, and made kind of a fool of myself, really, talking complete rubbish to him, and he was very understanding. I'd admired him for a long time. I'd seen him play several times with the Birds and kept my eye on his solo records. And he was doing lots of great songs. And I just thought, you know, it'd be great if he was recording. Next thing, I made the record Spike, and I invited him to come in and play on one of the tracks on that record. And around that time, he got another record deal and asked me for a song. So I wrote this one for him. And it has this little signature in it, which you heard sort of somewhat on this other guitar that I normally play. Which is really a 12-string guitar riff, and he did it up fine, but there's, as you heard, there's the little tribute to MacArthur Park in the middle of it, where it was all kind of psychedelic. And his producer prevailed that was not what radio would play, which I think is a lot of nonsense, because some of the Birds' best records changed time signature, and in our own records, we've had some, you know, like a song like Veronica has a bridge in a different rhythm than the rest of the record. If you allow everything to become very straight ahead, then it's a boring world. So there we are.
Well, you know, that's interesting, this covering your song phenomenon. I mean, it happened with Shipbuilding a long time ago, I guess. You had to cover...
That's one other occasion. I mean, I've had a bit of luck with writing songs for people, with people in mind, and then later recording them without me having anything to do with it.
Right.
So presumably I did a pretty good job in imagining them singing it, because they could see themselves in it. On other occasions, as in the case of this record, I have an idealized idea of somebody singing the song. It doesn't necessarily follow that they will agree with you, you know? Nevertheless, I mean, this record isn't truly about songs that are written for other people. Really, there's only four songs that have been issued before. Quite a lot of the songs were written for myself, and the connections with other people are tenuous, to say the least. And I tend to think that the record is definitely about where the songs are headed next rather than where they've been. Yeah.
Right. It's interesting. Left to your own devices in the studio, would it take you a long time to figure out how a song is going to end up on the record? Do you try it a number of ways?
What we wanted to do on this record, apart from the fact that there's a lot of ballads, and the heart and soul of the record is really in the ballads and everything they're singing about, we didn't want the record to become, therefore, you know, very still, too still and too repetitive of mood. So from time to time, there's an outburst of the kind of music that we've done a lot of in the past.
Right.
But hopefully we've approached it from a different way. So we've got songs like Complicated Shadows and You Bowed Down, and its full band arrangement is a pretty forceful sounding record. But we found new ways to propel the songs by Steve, you know, and Pete got together, and we made some loops up using sometimes found sounds, sometimes things we created ourselves. And there's things to be learned just about propelling a song so that it isn't all slow and predictable. But we didn't imagine we'd have this lovely electronic keyboard and with all the magical sounds that we're drawing from it.
There are many.
With our magic wand.
You talked a little bit about, even on this tour with Steve, you're doing the songs are changing from
you're hearing them in a different way.
Yeah, right.
Each new circumstance changes it, you know.
Yeah.
Even where you place a song in the show can change it, because if you play it when you first go on the stage, you're nervous, the audience is on what's going to happen tonight, what is it going to be about. They've known that we're coming to play to present the new songs. One of the reasons we've done this tour is that when we first came, you know, like we were in Philadelphia, we played in the Hawk Club or something like that, you know.
Exactly.
And we're right up close on people. And of course, we had the benefit of surprise. You know, we were a new group, and like any new group that's got good stuff, people are anxious to see you. When you come back, as you get more successful, you inevitably have to satisfy the demand of the people who want to see you, and the venues get bigger, and somebody's sitting further and further away from you. And it's no accident that the songs that people still have the most affection for are the ones that we all heard together develop when we were all sitting a lot closer to one another.
Interesting.
Now, it's easier, you know, you could say, well, the songs in the meantime maybe aren't as good. Well, maybe that's true. But I don't think that is true. I think that part of the consequence of people only falling in love with them through records is that to introduce a lot of new material in a concert is quite difficult, as any musician will tell you.
You want to do stick one of those older ones in here? That you've been working up?
I don't know what'll sound good on this.
Yeah, I don't know if Steve's got the right stops there.
No, but it's okay. Whatever you want to
do. Well,
can you do this?
Yeah.
Now there's newsprint all over your face, well, maybe that's why I can read you like a book. Just when I thought that I was getting my taste of life, I go and lose my appetite. Uncle, they like to sink their teeth into your thought of pride and a pleasure. Who would you rather do? If you say you're the one, do you think that I'm serious? You get that kind of talk from older men. If I say I love you, then I must be delirious. So why are you trying to bring my temperature up again?
I mean, that one was that was the odd man out on one of the couple of odd men out on the album Get Happy, which was a record where we did all, you know, we had one kind of style of arrangement for a whole bunch of songs written kind of similar to this record, All This Use Is Beauty. You know, it was these songs were written over 7 years, and as you said before, some of them were previously recorded by other people, but a lot of them were ones that didn't fit with the set of songs they might have been written currently with. And the songs on Get Happy were songs that we'd had out on the road during the tail end of the very furious period of touring that we did when we first started out, 2.5 years that we did straight from 77 to the mid-79. The arrangements that we came back home with at the end of that were very nervy, very much a product of the times and everything that we did and you know, everywhere we went. But they didn't necessarily make a good record, and we started out to try and find a rhythmic way of getting them down, and we started to use R&B grooves to try and space out all these millions of chords and words that I was writing. And this song, the funny thing about it is where when it was written, it was sort of a of-the-time song in my frame of mind. Now when I sing the second verse, you know, if you say, I'm the one, do you think I'm serious? You get that kind of talk from older men. Well, I am an old man, so sort of, it has a kind of different kind of humor to it.
That's why I was laughing when you were singing
it. Yeah, there's a few of the lines in a few of the songs that have taken on a different meaning. Steve's got a beautiful arrangement, which we would have loved to have played you if we had a piano. With the piano, which is probably circling, actually, it's probably halfway on its way to Sicily by now, I think, you know.
Elvis Costello, that first aired back in 1996 after All This Useless Beauty was released, and Costello was joined by Steve Naive on that borrowed keyboard. They were comparing that disc to his fourth album, 1980's Get Happy, where A Man Called Uncle first appeared. World Cafe is supported in part by an award from the National Endowment for the Arts, which believes that a great nation deserves great art. Additional support provided by the members of our World Cafe affiliates nationwide. They include KMSU in Mankato, Minnesota, and WEXT in Albany, New York. Shows produced at WXPN from the University of Pennsylvania in Philadelphia. I'm David Dye, and this is the World Cafe.